This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio. Show is broadcasting live from Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming and is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
Coming to you from the Detroit Sound Studios above Activate Gaming, it's The Undercard, bringing you the best in hand combat coverage with feature interviews, major events, and the hottest ring girls from around the nation. The Undercard is part of the Podcast Detroit Network. And now, here they are, always in your corner, Brad, Marv, and Jimmy.
184, but more importantly, Jimmy and Marv, we have hit the three-year mark.
Oh, my goodness.
We are 3 years old. Toddler.
Oh, God. Three years already.
That's right. We'd be wearing a 3T if we were wearing toddler clothing.
Pretty sure I wore a 3T at like 6 months. I was in like an extra large at 3 years old.
So 3 years, that's nothing to,
There are presidents who didn't last that long.
That's true. So we are happy to be here for 3 years. We're going to celebrate the only way we know how, trying to get you some good guests, drink occasionally here, give out our annual award, Miss Undercard for year three.
I hope I get it this year.
I don't,
you know what, Mark?
I get it.
You know what, Mark?
I think this is my year.
You know what? I will tell you this. I did vote for you, but then I had to retract my vote because you're not
because allowed. I rebuked your advances.
Well, is that not is, only Jimmy? That, not only that, but as a show host, you are not eligible.
What?
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Yeah. But our show is awesome. First off, who do we got lined up first, Jimmy?
Well, we have of YouTube fame. We have Master Ken.
Oh, I cannot wait.
Who will be joining us on the show? If you have never seen his YouTube videos, go to.
You learn a lot.
Enter the Dojo Show, and he has tutorials. He has self-defense classes. I believe he's based out of New Mexico.
He is Albuquerque, I believe.
If you've ever wanted to learn how to be the greatest martial artist of all time, watch his videos.
He deals with defense against subjects you wouldn't normally think of.
Right, like an illegal alien. And I don't mean like, you know, like Trump wants to deal with aliens. Like, he's talking like extraterrestrial.
Absolutely.
He's got a death ray, break their fingers. Yes, what exactly.
Exactly. There's the disabled defense.
Yes, the disabled defense, apparently I was not aware of how dangerous disabled people are.
Right, but he shows you.
He shows you
how to deal with them. It is... Yes. Amazing.
It is amazing.
I watched, I don't know how many of his videos today. I have learned so much.
And then I
have mastered the crotch grab.
I'm sure you have.
But that was a long time ago when I was like 14.
And then who do we got lined up for our second guest, Rochelle? What we got going on?
We have Hilmer Country, who's a Kronk legend.
He is a nice. Detroit legend, Kronk legend, boxing legend. That interview will be happening if you're listening live at about the 7:45 mark. And then who do we got third? We'll put Emily on the mic here. Who's finishing off the show?
She's
for
like,
us?
What?
Yeah, she
had it on the tip of her tongue.
She okay.
has a different job.
And also, not only that, but.
That's right. Yeah. Who is currently going through women's qualifying in wrestling. She has the next step in the Olympic trial process this weekend. She is from SFS. So it's going to be a pretty good show. Plus, we announce our Miss Undercard. So what a good show.
We've got my fingers crossed.
Really quickly, before we dial up Master Ken, I got to write down his phone number for producer Rochelle anyways. The Metro Detroit Golden Gloves was this past weekend.
Mm-hmm.
It happened at the Kronk Boxing Community.
Yeah.
4 days in a row of boxing. We mm-hmm. now have a team that we are going to field for the Salt Lake City Nationals.
That's awesome.
So,
Liz, would you say that you love the glove?
Yes.
Awesome.
Oh, wow.
So that happened this past weekend. Not only that.
So who's going? What's the team?
You want me to list everybody from the team?
Well, give us an idea. What are some highlights? Who are some of the people to watch for? Who is really going to?
Cortez Todd moved up in weight.
Okay. Juwan Jackson.
Yeah, hold on. If he wants them, I'll list them. I was going to list them later.
I didn't get a rundown of the show. So
no, I figured that would push us in Master Ken's time zone.
Well, fine. Fair enough.
Warfare with Master Ken.
Actually, I'm surprised he can meet with us because his class meets at 6:30. So.
Yeah, but that's
that's Mountain Time.
And contrary to what you believe this morning, Marv, that's actually backwards from us, not ahead of us.
Oh, that's fantastic, because everybody in our listening audience was privy to our group conversation. So that would be hilarious to them.
John Jones has a new opponent. We got to talk about that and got into Twitter war.
Is it scabies?
No.
Oh.
Nick Blackwell awoke from his coma. Talked about that last week.
Absolutely. That was great news.
Right?
So that's two different stories.
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, because the way it segued in, I thought that, like, oh, he's out of his coma,
so he must be his new opponent.
He's
a
new opponent.
No.
I was like, wait a minute.
He's probably going to have to sit some out for
a little
bit.
I would have figured, but.
It should have been like a semicolon there in between.
I was just confused. It was like, he has a new opponent.
Nick Blackwell is out of his coma.
Out of his coma, so we should expect him fighting next month.
You ever see those videos of the guy that gets hit in the face repeatedly with, like, the soccer ball, and now there's a volleyball thing. That's his next opponent. Yes, exactly. He's now out of his coma.
And last but not least, we are going to talk about I'll just give my prediction on the Pacquiao-Bradley fight. They fought three times. Really, it's Teddy Atlas versus Freddie Roach.
Yeah, which we've heard that conversation.
So
numerous times.
Yeah. But, yeah, I'm excited.
No, I mean when we played it on the air last week.
Yeah.
When he was basically ripping into him.
But I got to give a thanks to two people to the left of me here. First off, Jimmy, you worked 3 days, helped out the Metro Detroit Golden Gloves. Mm-hmm.
I was security. Because I was so intimidating. Oh, God. And nobody wanted to get by me.
Do you have your wristband?
I would say the more intimidating thing was all of the professional fighters.
No.
Or amateur fighters.
The funny thing was is there were so many. So my job was, everybody had to have a wristband when they came in. Fighters had to have fighters and managers, if they're going to be there all week or all 4 days, they got a pink wristband, and they had to leave them on. They couldn't take them off in between days. They had to leave them on, and then every day there was a new one, and then there was the VIPs. And my job was to make sure that nobody came through did not have a wristband. And there were so many times where, like, a boxing coach – who's like three times bigger than I am, would like walk right by me. I go, you got a wristband? No, man, I'm just going right over here. No, you got to have a wristband. And they would literally look me up and down like, boy, I could take you. And I would I will cut you. I will knock your ass out. And all I could do is look them back up and down and just basically go try it.
Yeah, try doing that as me.
Yeah, I know.
I was standing there at the VIP thing like,
yeah.
And then Emily Nicole helped also, so we thank you. And then Liz ringgirled all 4 days.
Yeah.
Raising a lot of money for the Golden Gloves on 50-50. And then we gave away free pizza for a year. I forgot who won that, but we called them.
There was four chances to win.
So,
You know what? The 50-50, the money and all that kind of stuff, I mean, that would have been nice, but to win the free pizza for a year.
Which had over a $600 value.
I know.
I had said I would have rather got, wasn't there like
there was free pizza for a year. That was the first prize.
Right.
The second prize was a free night stay at Greektown Casino.
Yep.
And then the third and fourth place winners won $50 gift cards.
For Greektown.
Like that you could bet with?
I thought it was just
no, they were for Greektown Casino.
Now, see, I would have rather had third or fourth place because I would rather just go play blackjack.
Yeah.
Win a bunch more money.
I was also the
pizza
photographer
was only
all weekend.
Once a week,
that's
though.
True.
Yeah, it's...
Shake my head. From Hungry Howie's.
You weren't acknowledged with a special medal on Sunday?
Not for being a photographer, no.
Oh, okay.
Like, she did ring girl stuff.
Every accolade we'll give. She was also a photographer and took home the nicest medal that was given out. Over the 4 days.
I don't know. Tony Harrison's award was pretty nice.
It
wasn't
a medal. That's a trophy.
And he had a belt with a medal on it. It was nice. Okay. Aiden got a couple medals.
That was his belt and handgun. It wasn't.
Aiden won all his shadow boxing matches.
I was going to say.
Thursday.
What was the medal for?
Knocking out his shadow boxing on Thursday and then winning the tournament on Sunday. So.
Oh, I thought it was for punching me in the nuts on Thursday.
No, no, he just gets an attaboy for that.
Yeah. Oh, he was so well behaved on Sunday.
Oh, okay.
So let's call up our first guest. Jimmy's going to introduce him because Jimmy is not only a fan of his, but has been practicing some of the techniques.
Oh,
nice.
So you just go into it, Jimmy.
He probably has to. Stop teaching.
Master Ken.
Hello, Master Ken. You're on the undercard. How you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
We're very good. We are very happy to have you on the show. For those of you who don't know, this is Master Ken, who is the, I believe it's the 11th degree black belt in Taido. Is that correct?
Emeritote.
I'm very sorry, Master Ken. Please,
you're lucky he's not in the room.
I know. I know.
He would tiger claw.
Yeah, I can't reach through this phone. I haven't figured out how to do that yet.
You will. I have the utmost faith in you, Master Ken.
Oh, I know.
So we're great. We've watched all of your videos, and they are highly instructional. We've learned a lot of great techniques. My first question to you is, at exactly what point did you realize that Emeritote was the greatest martial arts, like, ever?
Well, after wasting time studying various other martial arts around the world and figuring out that they were bullshit,
right?
I decided to create my own. You know, I realized every other martial art has a strength, but it also has a weakness. So I decided to create an art that had no weaknesses. And just took them from experience, created a bunch of moves just from experience. I have a move called the Hurricane.
Very familiar with that, yes.
Yeah, throw a lot of techniques in a lot of different directions at the same time. I came up with that after my first seizure. I did a lot of old school stuff they don't do anymore, you know, mm-hmm. fighting. We mm-hmm. have a whole part of the curriculum that's just dedicated to how to bite, where to bite, when to bite.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up. I one of the videos I watched, I saw where you were demonstrating how a jiu-jitsu move was particularly ineffective when you – I believe it was the gas
– the gas chamber.
The gas chamber, yes. That I'm incredibly effective and a bit unorthodox, but you could see it worked.
Yeah, you know, I don't understand why I don't see more of that type of thing in ground fighting. You
yes.
know, I see all these guys rolling around trying to get arm locks. If you just sit on somebody's head and just just open up your gastrointestinal
right.
system and just let it rip, I mean, who's gonna want to fight after that?
That's the great thing that I've seen about your style is that, you know, it uses those common sense techniques.
Yeah, common sense. That's mainly what Emeritote is about.
Mm-hmm.
You can also prepare for that, like, during the day before your match, you know, and including in what you eat.
Yeah.
You can make it more effective.
Now,
oh, yeah, I always keep my system fully loaded.
Of course.
Now, to be.
Now, me and the producer, Rochelle, had a debate. Oh, every great martial artist has had quite the movie career. And Master Ken, as far as I know, you've not been in any movies, but here's the thing. You've had to have turned down roles, just like Bruce Lee has. Name some roles you might have turned down over the years of movies we know that Master Ken just thought his talents were needed elsewhere.
Yeah, well, I mean, part of the problem is that the movies are fake.
Red,
you know,
Master
can't
Ken,
take
you're the Tiger.
You got to do the real deal. So, you know, there are various things that I did turn down. I was actually supposed to be in the movie, The Fire Down Below, that Steven Seagal did.
Mm-hmm.
Initially that movie was about chlamydia.
Yes. I had read that on IMDb.
Yeah. They did a lot of rewrites and it turned into something else.
And not as good, I would think.
Well,
it ended up being about the environment.
Yeah. What's that about? Right.
And that brings me to my next question. I watched what I believe is a real-life documentary called The Disposables, starring you, correct?
Yeah, that was a bit of, you know, we're starting to release some never-before-seen footage here and there about people are very curious about my backstory, my origin, various adventures that I've been on, a lot of a lot of secretive stuff that up until now I thought I should keep under wraps. But you know, we're letting people know that that I'm the real deal.
That's, yeah, absolutely. That's awesome. Absolutely. And I mean, it was very, I mean, now I kind of understand a little bit more about, you know, your psyche and how you got to where you are. I have another question for you, though.
Yeah. And it shows how effective Ameridote is even in an anti-terrorism situation. You know, we went up against a group that not a lot of people know about called Scandinavians Intentionally Spreading Intimidation.
Yes,
or CCs.
Yeah, or CCs, right, so, correct.
Yeah, we showed that Ameridote can easily go up a bunch against the CCs.
Right, absolutely.
Right.
Now, I heard a rumor. I watched a video where you demonstrated your kill face, and I heard a rumor that you traveled to Greece and basically adopted that from Medusa's visage. Is that correct?
You know, I improved it, you know. Because it did before, they would just turn to stone. But then you got to get them out of there.
Right, right. That's
what, you know, you get people trying to break into your place all the time. You turn somebody to stone in the doorway. Now you got to climb out the window. You know.
Correct. Yes.
Now in watching a lot of your videos, you have a techniques that, you know, I mentioned common sense, but like that everyday people can employ as well. Now I am what doctors refer to as a fat ass. And so do you have techniques that I could use effectively to defend myself? Let's say if I'm at a buffet and somebody is trying to like go for like the last quesadilla or something, that I can get in there and defend myself. Do you have some
Well, you know, they say in martial arts it's important to go with what you know.
Right.
So in your case I would grab a fork.
Okay.
Something that you're really familiar with.
Yes.
You know? Something that you're good at handling.
Oh, absolutely.
And you know, fork can be devastating.
Mm-hmm.
I also, you know, would use your advantages. You know, what are you weighing?
Oh, I'm over 3 bills.
Yeah, that's a huge advantage in many different ways.
Indeed.
Really, all you got to do is get close to them. You know?
Right. Okay.
You go ahead and wrap somebody up and just to throw that weight on them.
Mm-hmm.
And just, I mean, there's a move that I talked to a group of failed Weight Watchers mm-hmm. members called the compression chamber, and
yes.
All it is just you just sit on them.
Okay,
that's all you do. You just crush them.
Just
you
okay.
squeeze all the air out of their lungs, and that's it. You know, that's the beauty of Ameridote. We work with all kinds of people, have all kinds of walks of life, all kinds of disabilities. You know, I'm actually doing a program with the homeless right now.
Really.
Yeah. Somewhere we bring them in and we have them attack us and we practice our techniques and we feed them afterwards.
Oh, wonderful.
Doing
good in the community as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, that's fantastic.
People have been very, very skeptical of it. But I tell you, as soon as I put the word out, I got bum rushed. I mean,
I bet you did.
Been very, very busy. And also been working, teaching some folks over at the Epilepsy Foundation of America. Mm-hmm. And they're great because no matter how hard you hit them, they just shake it off.
They sure do.
Now, you also had some controversy with your teachings on how to subdue a woman. First off, I want you to run through the techniques of how a man would subdue a woman. But also, why do you think there was so much controversy about that?
Well, you know, I mean, Ameridote is about equality. You know, we're equal opportunity fighters. We'll fight anybody. And it's not fair to women to underestimate their ability to do damage, to attack a man. And so, you know, I just had to show a man that if he's in a situation where he's getting beat up by a woman, which is more and more common these days.
Oh, isn't
but
it?
There are safe ways to restrain a woman.
Mm-hmm. This was actually information that Jimmy and we needed, because if there are two people that get attacked by women more than anybody else, it is us.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah. I'm sure. Just the sound of your voice.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to agree.
Mm-hmm.
But there's various ways. I mean, there's all sorts of ways close quarter bear hug type situations where you're not going to injure them. You can try to control them, or you can, you know, do things like hiding your credit card.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You can do things like throwing some Mary Kay makeup in the opposite direction.
Oh, yes.
To show them the makeup, because it's very expensive, you know, and they like that. Mm-hmm. So you wave it in front of them,
yes.
And then you throw it, and then when they're going to pick that up, then you run.
Oh, that I had never considered that before.
We do like our makeup.
Sure do.
You do. And I, you know, I'm not just here for the guys who can handle themselves. I'm here for the weaklings too.
Yeah.
Now, as a Mara Dote master, you have also said that not only do you have to be careful about opponents, but because you are an Mara Dote master, you have to actually be on guard against yourself. Talk a little bit about that with our audience on how you might be your own biggest threat as a master of Mara Dote.
Yeah, that was a tough realization when I after training various people realized that. Well, I thought once they were trained up in Mara Dote, they had no danger because they could beat anybody. But then I thought, well, they're so dangerous, they might actually be a danger. What if they attack themselves?
Mm-hmm.
You find yourself attacking yourself. You wake up and you're being strangled by you. You need to know how to defend against that. So we have a whole program called Jiu-Jitsu that basically teaches you how to defend yourself from yourself. You have to learn to imagine what yourself is thinking and anticipate it, and just find ways to defend you from you.
Now, this is like a philosophy thing, right? Because there's the age-old question of, you know, can God create a rock so big that even he can't lift, right? So can a Mara Dote master become so good at a Mara Dote that even he cannot beat himself?
Well, right. That's why I would recommend that. I wouldn't recommend putting any rocks in your house that you can't lift.
Right.
Because you need to be able to use them to defend yourself.
Yes.
Now, I have to ask you, Master Ken, I did see the video where you talked about jiu-jitsu, and it seemed like you sucker punched yourself a little bit. Was there any retribution after that?
Oh, yeah. I've been at war with myself ever since.
a good self-flogging. Okay.
Now, I have to ask you, Master Ken, was it your idea or your assistant's idea to come up with the 100th video you posted on your YouTube channel where you showed us 100 ways to attack the groin? I mean, you showed us, but it really seemed like maybe it was your assistant's idea. Is that correct?
Well, that's a rumor I want to squash. Everything in Mara Dote is my idea, even if it comes out of somebody else's mouth. So it's definitely my idea, although I will say that Todd Woodland, my assistant, is a very willing and eager participant. His pain tolerance is the reason that he's lasted so long in Mara Dote. And he took all those shots. He took everything I had to give and more, and, you know, the only reason that we stopped at 100 was that we had to eventually take him to the hospital. So now that he's recovered from the 100 ways to attack the groin, we're going to probably do another video and see if we can get to 200.
Okay.
We are being joined by Master Ken. You can check out all his things he's talking about at enterthedojoshow.com. But disclaimer, do not try anything without the direct supervision of Master Ken. As we continue our interview on, where do you think mixed martial arts as a sport belongs in the martial art world? I mean, you challenge yourself to find different ways to keep martial arts protecting your people that train under you. Where does mixed martial arts fall in this world of martial arts?
You mean a Mara Dote?
Yeah, Mara Dote.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, are you asking me about, so what, do you want me to talk about MMA?
Oh, yeah, and like how, where it fits in the world of martial arts.
Yeah, I mean, if there was a scale, it would be just below ballet.
I've been saying this for years.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many rules, and you know, once they get into weight classes and all the rules and wearing gloves. You know, because the last time I checked, street fighters don't wear gloves. But you know who does? Lunch ladies.
That's right. They sure
do. The thing is that lunch ladies have touched fewer wieners.
That's a true statement, right there.
Yeah, true words have never been spoken. Master Ken dropping knowledge.
Dropping truth bombs.
That's awesome. So I was particularly intrigued by your disabled defense video, because something I had never considered before. You mentioned that, you know, if somebody loses the use of their legs, you know, you can punch them all you want in those extremities. They can't feel anything. Their senses become heightened, you know, the other. So they're essentially a superhero.
Exactly. They become, you know, and which means they can also become super villains. I mean, there's no rule that I've seen anywhere that says that just because somebody's disabled can't doesn't mean that they can't become a criminal.
Right.
So we have to, again, treat them equally and learn how to defend. So you know, we do teach folks that are disabled how to defend themselves. But then that's the great thing about bringing them into class is that then I can use them to teach the normals how to defend themselves.
Exactly.
We work on techniques like that, you know, how to kick somebody out of a wheelchair, mm-hmm. How to beat somebody with a crutch, how to break a cast, you know, if somebody's all casted up.
And you're the only one doing this, as far as I know, which I think is very brave of you.
I don't know why, because, again, it's common sense as far as I'm concerned. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's become so popular lately, you know, we're having to put a whole curriculum together just for that.
Yeah.
We've been trying to come up with some names.
You see, we could practice this right now in the studio because our social media guru over here, she's got a neck brace on as we speak.
It's super restrictive.
But she only wears it to get free drinks and stuff. So.
Yeah.
Perfect. Exactly. Yeah. So that'd be kind of like fighting Batman. You know, he can't turn his head.
Yes, exactly. See?
Yes.
Now, you all enjoyed that. Really quickly, illegal aliens, that's all Donald Trump is talking about, but you're taking it a step further in preparing the world for a threat of illegal aliens with martial arts. Tell us a little bit about your strategy on this.
Yeah, well, we have to prepare ourselves for fighting creatures from other worlds. You know, it's only a matter of time before they invade.
He's right.
And we're not going to be able to go up against them with their technology. So it's going to come down to hand-to-hand combat or hand to tentacle combat or whatever they have, whatever dangly things come off of them. And you got to practice, you got to practice blocking anal probes. You got to practice dodging spaceships, grabbing their big green heads and figuring out how to crack them open.
Yeah. The forethought, you know, the looking ahead and, you know, who else is planning for this stuff? That's what I'm saying.
Master Kin.
Yeah, well,
yeah.
That's why we have. That's why we're so popular. It's why we have 25 million views on our YouTube channel, and that's why Maribote has been spreading throughout the world faster than a staph infection at a jiu-jitsu tournament.
Master Kin, we do have a question for one of our listeners. He would like to know: have you ever been able to sneak up on yourself, and if so, how did you defend yourself?
I managed to do that, it's expensive. I broke a bunch of mirrors. you see yourself sneaking up right behind yourself, and you throw a punch at what you think is you, mm-hmm. but it's your reflection. So I would at least recommend wearing gloves. Cut your hands up.
Yeah. So and stay out of fun houses.
Now, with all the Chuck Norris jokes that go around about how strong he is in martial arts, do you know any good Master Kin one that is out there?
First of all, Master Kin's no joke. Second of all, Chuck Norris things are affectionate and they're cute, but the guy's like 77 years old.
That's true.
So
what you're saying is Master Kin needs no gimmicks.
No, I don't need any gimmicks. And if I square off against Chuck Norris, I'd just take away his walker.
Matt, we want to thank you so much, Master Kin, for joining us. I mean, it's been a riot. God. Once again, you can check him out on YouTube, but also enter thedojoshow.com. If you don't mind, because we're such huge fans, do you mind giving us a plug saying that this is Master Kin and you're listening to The Undercard?
Sure.
All right, whenever you're ready.
Master Kin.
All right.
Shut up.
I'm Master Kin, and the undercard is bullshit.
Yes,
perfect.
Perfect.
Thank you so much, Master Kin.
Thank you so much.
Of course. Thanks for calling.
All right. Take care. Bye. Master Kin, Meridote in the house.
Yes. That was – he is honestly like – I mean, there was Bruce Lee – you know, Chuck Norris, I mean, Ip Man, but none of them compare to Master Ken.
Yeah. Right.
They really can't.
We should have got him dropping Jiu-Jitsu is bullshit to replace Jiu-Jitsu sucks. Right. Jiu-Jitsu's bullshit. What you want is a Maridote.
Right. We're going to go to our first break. We're going to announce Miss Undercard on the other side. We should have voice disguised her earlier, so if you were listening to the show, you probably know who it is. But anyways,
it's me.
Talk to you soon.
This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio.
On internet radio, thank you for joining us. We just had Master Ken. It was a great interview.
Absolutely.
If you're tuning in late, go to the podcast.
The guy is amazing.
Ninth degree
black belt, right? Ninth degree or 19th degree, whatever.
11th degree black belt. So not too bad. Mm-hmm. And in a few minutes, we're going to have Hilmer Kinty. The first professional champion from Kronk Gym, so I'm very excited about that.
Like first, like from back in the day?
Yeah,
that's
first
awesome.
Professional champion from Kronk Gym. I hear Sugar Hill is en route, so Sugar Hill will be here momentarily too.
Awesome.
So a lot of Kronk love in the house right now, which is good. So with these anniversaries, when the first anniversary came about, were we not on air? No, are we on here?
Okay. You keep saying we were on.
Okay. Anyways,
but then it like blows on my ears.
Yeah.
Well, but that's your.
We decided to make a Cooperstown for our ring girls. Our ring girls are a huge part of the show. They actually ring girl out in public events and everything like that. And this Cooperstown for ring girls is somebody over a year that has dedicated themselves to the show and has gone above and beyond to earn a title called Miss Undercard. Our first year, Miss Undercard was Kayla, and our second year, season two, whatever you want to call it, was Bailey. So that's our Cooperstown. And this year, we are proud to announce that Liz McDonald.
Oh, my God. Thank you so much. I've worked so hard for this, and it means a lot.
Marf, it wasn't you. It was Liz. What? It was Liz.
It was me.
Bitch.
So congratulations on the Miss Undercard Award.
It does entail
a raise, and not only does it entail a raise, but a little bit more responsibilities, but you're definitely up to it, so thank you so much.
Who does number two work for?
Don't screw up now.
There she is, Miss Undercard. Anyone's going to sing that song?
No.
Huge award, because you will always have the title of the third, year three, whatever. No one can ever take the
and
year three.
Third time is the charm.
Yep.
That is true.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
First year, pickings were slim. Second year, we were still kind of feeling it out. But like by the third year, we're like, we got this down. This is it.
She's a keeper.
Marv's comparing it before, like, baseball before African Americans could play. You know, like those guys.
Wow.
I think you meant basketball.
Wow.
No. It's baseball. You remember? It's one of those.
No, I don't remember. I was born in the 70s. So. They've just kind of always been playing. You know, I was born, you know, after they got civil rights and. Like 110 years after slavery ended. So.
Sometimes I forget how old Marv is. Or I believe he had a time machine and went back and covered it all.
Well, I do remember the first time that Jackie Robinson stepped up to the plate.
Guys.
Now, I have to kill all of you.
Oh, no. Okay. No good.
All right. Why?
Because we were joking. So we move on.
All right. Conversational speed bump, Jimmy.
Exactly. Oh, wow. Daniel Tosh has the best joke about that, by the way. I laugh every time I go over a speed bump. Maybe one of the best jokes ever, where he's talking about the speed bumps were put in his neighborhood for a kid that was hit by a car. Yeah. And he goes, and as bad as I feel for the kid that was hit for the car, all I can think of is their family every time they go over those speed bumps have to be reminded of losing their child.
My God.
Wow.
But it's Tosh.
He's right, though. He's absolutely right. And you know, at some point, like, they're riding with, like, a family member who doesn't know that they were put there, or a friend, and they're like, God, whose stupid idea was it to put these speed bumps in? Oh, God, that's terrible.
I love Tosh, man. His humor is so inappropriate, but it just is so good. So yeah, really quickly, and we'll touch on it in a little bit. 3 years, the show's changed a lot, actually.
Yeah.
And man, did it go by quick in a way.
I don't know what you're talking about because it
seems
like
it went by quick.
No.
Okay, maybe it didn't. No. Maybe it's been a long.
I think it went by
3 years.
A year for me went by fast, but I know 3 would.
You know, yes and no. It went by quick, but at the same time, it doesn't. But this is how I think of it. 3 years ago, I did not really know you people. I mean, if you really think about it, we were not friends.
That's not true.
Well,
the first day, Jim, we're sitting in the parking lot, and Jimmy and I are just looking at each other.
Like, why do I know you?
How do I know you?
Yeah.
When we start talking, I'm like, did you where do you live? And
right.
Did you go to school here? And then finally, oh yeah, we worked at Greenfield.
We were at the museum. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, if you think about it, I mean, maybe a little bit more than 3 years ago, we didn't know each other, and it seems like I've known you guys like all my life. I mean, honestly.
It sure does feel that way sometimes.
Yeah, Marv a little bit, you know, it's a little bit different.
I've known Marv a long time.
Yeah, I was 15 years, I think?
I know, I you were through the marriage.
I'm so sorry.
Film, all that stuff.
So right, it started with film, so it would have been, it was probably like 2000, 2001, I think.
Yeah,
so.
I go back and we've known each other a long time.
Yes, we have.
So... I believe you have the phone number for the next guest, right?
Yeah, I'm ready to go whenever you are.
All right, let's do it up. We're going to call up Hilmer Kinty right now.
While we're waiting, this thing popped up that I know you will like, Brad. It says, I set my DVR to record The Biggest Loser, and it keeps taping Ohio State football games. I
love it.
Awesome. Hilmer Kinty speaking.
Hey, Hilmer, this is Brad. You're live on the undercard. How are you today?
Good, Brad. How you doing?
Good. We are joined by Hilmer Kinty. As I said, he is the first professional champion from the Kronk Gym. He was at the Golden Gloves this past weekend, and we asked him to be on our third anniversary show, and he obliged, so we greatly appreciate that. Thank you so much, Hilmer.
No problem. It's my pleasure, Brad.
All right. So going back over your career, I realized a couple things, and I was very familiar with you because I'm a huge boxing fan, but you're one of probably the only boxers that boxed in the Olympia and then also boxed at, I believe, the opening of Joe Louis Arena. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is correct. So, yeah, I boxed in the Olympia, and I was actually the first professional or the first championship bout at the at Joe Louis Arena.
And tell me the differences between the two stadiums because, the Olympia, everyone talks about how legendary that was. Obviously, the Beatles played there and everything like that. And then I bet you at the time you guys thought Joe Louis Arena was amazing. And now look at it, how arenas have come. Tell us a little bit about both arenas.
Yeah, I think the fond memories I have of Olympia is I know we would go in and we would weigh in on the morning of the fight. And a lot of times we'd see a lot of the hockey players, they're out there practicing, you know,
really?
That day. And I can't remember which hockey player it was, but he came over and he said to Tommy Hearns, he says, "Well, Tommy, I know you've won all your fights, but he says I've won all mine and I've never even been hit." And he just talked about how much they fought a lot actually on the ice as much as we did in the ring.
Yeah.
I just thought that was very, very funny.
Now, you're talking about a legendary time in history because of the Kronk. Talk a little bit about those early days because you guys were rock stars. I was born in 77, but when I hear old stories about you, Emmanuel, and the first wave of Kronk fighters, you guys were really treated with a lot of respect and the city got behind you. Tell us a little bit about those times and some memories you might have.
Well, you know, really well. Tommy Hearns was the rock star. There's no question about that. I think Tommy Hearns came in and Tommy started knocking people out, and he was knocking people out early, and he was doing it in such a sensational way. It was just hard to ignore him, and not only ignore him locally here in Detroit, but people start taking notice all around the world. And in most cases, I was fighting on Tommy Hearns' card. So, you know, I was getting a chance to really hone my skills, get better and better, get a lot of experience. The other thing I think that helped me a lot was the fact that I was sparring with Tommy on a daily basis. You know, Tommy had 12 pounds on me, but the fact that he was so fast, so experienced in professional boxing,
in such a good boxer. I just think it made me better. And I think that was one of the things that we were able to do so well with the Kronk organization. There were so many good boxers in the gym, so many boxers that came to the gym on a consistent basis. For us to find good work was never a problem. We would always be prepared for our next fight because of the sensational boxers that we had in our gym on a daily basis.
Now, you guys, because it was a beginning of an era with Kronk launching in there, who did Emmanuel teach you guys about, or who down the road did you guys like as boxers? I mean, obviously Joe Louis at that time had quite the history in Detroit, not being born in Detroit, but was a fighter from Detroit. Was there anybody that you guys talked about in the gym in the early days that you guys were huge fans of?
Not really. There was Sugar Ray Robinson, and that was because Sugar Ray Robinson was a lot closer to our weight. I think Sugar Ray Robinson, he had a style that was a lot more comparable to ours because, you know, he moved very well. He was very fluid. He was very fast. He could punch hard. I think that's the reason why we kind of gravitated to his type of style. I just think there were a lot of good fighters that were around at that time. But I think we had such a tremendous amateur background. I mean, I know I had, you know, close to 150 amateur fights, and I think Tommy was around the same amount of fights. But we had a lot of experience coming into professional ranks, and one of the things that we always tried to do is we tried to carry a lot of that experience from the amateur ranks right into the professional ranks. And what I mean by that is, as opposed to a lot of the professional fighters, we noticed that their style was a lot slower. I mean, or they didn't punch as much, or they didn't punch as fast. I think we tried to keep the same cadence that we had in the amateurs, and we just took it to the pros. You know, we threw a lot of punches. We were very busy. We were very methodical in the way we did things. And we just took that right from the amateurs right into the pros and didn't really change a whole lot. And I think it took a lot of the more experienced professional boxers by surprise.
Now, everybody gets into boxing for other reasons or different reasons, and that's part of their story. That's what makes boxing so great. Everyone knows Mike Tyson's story. Everybody knows the story of Muhammad Ali or Cassius Clay at the time. What's Hilmer's story? What drew you to boxing at an age to get in the amateur program? And how happy were you that you found it?
Yeah, I always laugh when I hear that question because I remember, I've got three other brothers. All are very athletic oriented. You know, they all excelled in football, basketball, baseball. You know, I tried all of those sports, and I just could not excel at those sports. And I remember going to the recreation center. At the time, I was living in Columbus, Ohio. I went to the recreation center, and I saw some of my friends actually, you know, boxing on the boxing team there. And so I just said, I'll just try this as a last resort. You know, it just seemed to be my sport. It seemed to click for me. I did very well in the amateurs. Then I just thought this was my sport. I remember as an amateur, you know, I went to the Olympic trials in 72. I went to the Olympic trials again in 76, and I got very close to the Olympics, but, you know, just no cigar. But, you know, I could tell that I did have not only the experience but the talent to compete very well in the pros.
Can you give us a lesson that maybe Emmanuel taught you in those early days that stuck with you and made you the person you were? Because, I mean, at that time, he's developing young minds. You had Milt McCrory also there. Milt's a great guy. I mean, you two are some of the nicest guys ever in boxing. It's tough to imagine you guys as killers because I'm only 38, but, I mean, you guys were. Yeah, Jimmy Paul was another killer down the road. Like, tell us a lesson that stuck with you that made you the man you were today.
Well, I think one of the things that Emmanuel was, he was serious about is, you know, making sure that, you know, you work out, you know, that you're working out on a consistent basis. You know, he'd provide all the tools that you needed, but he wanted to make sure that you worked out on a consistent basis. The other thing with Emmanuel was that he was very methodical. I mean, he just knew about boxing. He would be able to watch a fighter, and he watched a lot of fight films. He would be able to watch a fighter, and what I mean by that, he'd be able to watch your opponent, and he'd be able to pick things out that I just couldn't see. he would be able to pick things out, weaknesses out in this fighter that I'm getting ready to fight that I just was not able to see. And not only that, then he would be able to take you into the gym, work on the punch miss to the point where you understood exactly what you needed to do to be successful against this other fighter. Of course, you know, you, because of your boxing experience, you know, there were a lot of things that you knew how to do, but I just think he took you up and above. Not only that, I just think Emmanuel, I just think he was really serious about honing his own skills as a trainer, not only as a trainer, but also as a manager. So he, remember, he not only trained us, but he did a lot of the management too. And so he got into professional boxing, and he not only taught us how to box or prepared us for our fights, I guess I should say, but he also learned the management side of boxing. And I really do. I take my hat off to him for that because, you know, I know, you know, that was a lot of time and dedication on Emmanuel's part to make himself successful in that area.
Yeah, and you're talking about a skill that Emmanuel had that back then in the late 70s, early 80s, you didn't have the technology that you do here. So you're going off of seeing it maybe once. Maybe you get a hold of the film and seeing it twice. That was a skill back then to be able to pick apart a fighter and know who you're going against that we take for granted now because of all the technology where you can watch a fight 40 times over on YouTube or on Showtime HBO. They'll re-air it. That was a skill to have back then that not a lot of people had.
Yeah, I think that really – I just think that's where Emmanuel was just a genius. I mean, he really was. He was just very good at that, you know, how he was able to pick a lot of those things out. A lot of times I never understood. Not only that, he knew how to motivate you too. I mean, he really did. He knew how to motivate you before a fight. He knew how to motivate you in the corners. And he really did. He just knew how to motivate you to get you out there and do the things that he thinks would make you successful.
Now, talk about you were talking about preparing and inspiring Tommy and stuff like that. Who was the best sparrer back in those days? Who brought it every time and who won those gym wars that no one got to see behind closed doors?
I'll tell you, one guy that I always had, and I think not only me, but Tommy had problems with him. I think everybody in the gym had problems with this guy. This guy, DeJuan Johnson. He never won a world championship, but this guy, I mean, he really did. He brought it. He brought it every single time. I mean, even on some of those days that wasn't his best days or wasn't a good day for him, I mean, he would bring it every time. But, you know, the other thing you have to take into consideration, you know, there again, I sparred with Tommy Hearns. I had DeJuan Johnson. I had Jimmy Paul. I had Milton McCroy. You know, I've got all this good sparring that I get on a daily basis, you know. And you're talking about, you know, sometimes 10 and 12 rounds of sparring every single day against guys of this caliber. I mean, I just think it's kind of hard not to be successful, you know, when you got a plan like that.
We're being joined by Hilmer Kinty, first professional champion out of the Kronk, legend in the Detroit area. Also, we just learned fought in the Olympian and Joe Louis. You retired at 29-2 with 17 KOs, but you were also on a win streak of, I believe, 7 wins it was, and you retired in 1984. What made you walk away at that time? Because typically not everyone leaves boxing on a good note like that. Why did you think it was time?
Well, you know, I guess the thing with me was, you know, I had the eye injury after I lost the title. I had the eye injury. So, you know, that was kind of still in the back of my mind, was kind of always in the back of my mind. And I really did. I just think it, you know, in some way, psychologically, it hurt my performance. I just noticed that even though I was winning a lot of those fights, the guys that I was beating were guys that, I mean, the guys that I was winning decisions against were guys that I probably would have knocked out earlier in my career. And I just start feeling like, you know, it just wasn't there. And I think the skills were there, but I just think I had lost a lot of the confidence. Because remember, when I lost the championship, I had the eye injury, and I was out of boxing for about 18 months. So that's a long time, and especially for someone like myself, which my boxing skills or my boxing style is basically based upon timing. It's really tough to get that timing back after 18 months.
Sugar Hill is joining us here. I know you're very familiar with Sugar Hill. He sits in with us sometimes and the Kronk legacy. Tell us what Kronk means to you. I wanna close on that note, and I wanna thank you for joining us on our third anniversary. But you see it everywhere, and it means something to everyone in the city of Detroit and around the world. But being one of the beginning fighters, what does it mean to you more than anything?
I really do. I just think it really does. I mean, it just means the world to me. I just think the Kronk organization, of course, is the organization that gave me my opportunity to be a world champion, something that I had, fought for years. I really do. I just think the Kronk, I think just so much of the Kronk organization, I really would. I'd like for us all to come together. You know, a lot of the former Kronk champions, you know, including Javen, I'd like for all of us to come together and develop another Kronk organization, so to speak. I mean, we've got good boxers here locally. The boxers that we have here now are no less than the Tommy Hearns and the Helmer Kentys and the Jimmy Pauls and Mel McCroys. They are just as good. We just have to put together a program that will hone those skills the way Emmanuel did.
Yeah, anything to add to that, Sugar?
Hello, Hilmer.
How you doing, Sugar Hill?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm just sitting back enjoying the story that you're telling. You know, some things that I don't know, but just thinking back on those times where you know, when you were talking about coming up, through the amateur and professional rankings and boxing at Kronk, I have a lot of memories of you being fighting at the Olympia Stadium. One of my things I can tell now, people, is that I was the water boy for you guys back then. I'm sure you don't know it too much, but I was the water boy, getting those glass bottles.
I remember.
Getting those glass bottles at the water fountain back by the locker room. So mm-hmm. I always remember one fight where you fought at Cobo. I think a guy dislocated his shoulder or something like that. I mean, not at Cobo, but at Olympia Stadium. And I guess after the fight was over, you winked at me. Yeah, little man, that's me, you know. You know. But later on, I found out that you didn't really wink at me. You winked at my aunt, Marie. But I was just sitting over there by them. But I always thought it was for me. You know? So that's one of the good memories I had, you know.
Not just Marie Stewart.
Yeah, Marie Stewart, yeah. So, yeah.
Imagine wife.
Right, yeah. So you know, you was just looking in that direction. But, yeah, you was always one of my favorite fighters to watch just because of the volume of punches. And, it was always serious with you. You know, you had fun, but it was always serious. It was your business, it was your job, and it was something that you was good at. So, a lot of just sitting back listening to you and enjoying the stories.
Well, and Javen, as you well know, it goes without saying that we're very proud of you, of what you've been able to accomplish in such a short time. And there again, it's all because of your dedication, even back then, all the dedication that you presented and provided to us, even back then. I think that's the reason why you're so successful now.
Now, because I have both of you guys on the air right now, the original Kronk Community Center on McGraw, obviously abandoned. Once again, the barricades have been tore down. We were there, I believe, kind of recently, and people were able to. I mean, I don't ever want to see it tore down, but maybe the building isn't in a capacity ever to be used again. What do you guys hope happens to the original Kronk because of all the history there? Do you hope it's remodeled and used for something down the road, or is the memories, because it's so far gone, the building, that you guys would be okay with it being raised?
I'll go ahead and go first because age before beauty. So,
listen. Let me. Since you said that, Jimmy Paul, I saw him at the Golden Gloves, and he always said,
I really would. I'd love to see that Kronk gym, you know, come back. But remember, you know, that Kronk, when you start talking about the Kronk gym was actually in the basement, so it was a really small part of that entire recreation center. And I just know, because that building is so old, I just think it would just take a tremendous amount of money to keep that building in a manner that would be sufficient, you know, for us to continue to work out in. So I really do. I mean, there's a lot of memories that's going to go down with that building. There's no doubt about that. But I really do. I think we need to move forward you know, in the manner in which we're doing now. I mean, the gym that that Kronk is located in now is it's a really nice gym, it's a state of the art gym. I think it really is, and I think we can even do better than that as we begin to expand the organization. Not only that, hopefully build some more champions.
How about you, Hill? You guys have found a very beautiful home. It hosted the Golden Gloves. I do have a feeling that that building is probably beyond saving for some form. Is it better just to see it there rotting, or is it better to put a plaque up in its place or try to get it as a historical building? What's your thoughts on it?
I can't put it any more perfectly spoken than the words of Hilmer James Kinty. His wisdom over my youth. He had the correct words for it. We have to move on. So we're at a new location now. And as you mentioned, you know, some kind of marker or something like that would be, you know, I guess sufficient enough, you know, in the process of revitalizing that neighborhood as well. You know, just something to remember. And, you know, as the place was here, and this was something that – this was some place that great things happened at. And just move on and leave it at that.
Well, we want to thank you so much for joining us, Hilmer. Class act, you know, great representation of boxing in Detroit, and we want to thank you for joining us tonight.
No, thank you for having me on. And, Javen, I'm sure I'll see you very soon.
Okay, I'll see you too, and it was good seeing you at the Golden Gloves as well.
Yep, thank you very much.
All right, that was Hilmer Kinty, first professional champion out of the Kronk Gym, and who at the time, besides probably Emmanuel, knew what would come next? What's the total count of champs? Do you know that offhand, Hill? I mean, countless, but probably only Emmanuel knew at that time how many he had.
It was around the area of 44, and then you counted down. I always counted Donald Stevenson for him because that was his last fighter that was going up, so it would be about 45 world champions.
Amazing. We got to do What's on Tap with Jimmy here, and then we're going to go to a short break, and then we're going to track down our next guest. We're celebrating 3 years on Undercard.
All right. Once again, this is What's on Tap, sponsored by Falling Down Beer Company. All right, I got to pull up my my thing here. All right, we're going to start with MMA first, April 5th, FFC 20, Fusion Fighting Championship 20 in Lima, Peru, April 7th, JOF MMA, Juranese Open Fight MMA 14 in Brazil, April 8th, we have M1 Challenge 65, Emi versus Falco in St. Petersburg, Russia. We have on April 9th, TEF, Total Extreme Fighting, at the National Stadium in Dublin, Ireland. April 9th, Fight Night, Medicine Hat, Alberta, Canada. Also on the 9th, we have X-Cage 9, PLMMA 65, Torun in Poland. We have, NFC Natal Fight Championships 10 in Rio Grande, Brazil. Also on the 9th, we have Batalaba MMA 2 in Sao Paulo, Brazil. April 9th, we have VN Valence Night in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. April 10th, we have UFC Fight Night 86, Rothwell versus Dos Santos in Croatia. And on April 10th, we have Shutu Torio Nation State Force 05 in Kawaga, Japan. Moving on to boxing, April 7th at Costa Mesa, California, Adam Stewart versus Matt McKinley, 4 rounds for the heavyweights. April 8th in Moscow, Edward Trovansky versus Cesar Suenka, rematch, 12 rounds. We have April 9th at Las Vegas, HBO pay-per-view, Manny Pacquiao versus Timothy Bradley Jr., their third fight, 12 rounds for the welterweights. London Showtime, Charles Martin versus Anthony Joshua, 12 rounds for Martin's IBF heavyweight title. Potsdam, Germany, Jack Kluke versus Jean Carlos Prada. 12 rounds for Klukaev's WBA regular junior middleweight title. At Pittsburgh, Jason Bergman versus Jesse Barbosa. 8 rounds for the heavyweights. Salem, New Hampshire, Luis Orlandio versus Del Valle. Orlandio Del Valle versus Jas Crespo. 8 rounds for the junior featherweights. And once again, that's What's on Tap, sponsored by Falling Down Beer Company. And we'll be right back.
This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio.
Welcome back to The Undercard, everybody. It's episode 184, as we're celebrating the 80s, if, in case you didn't know that. 1984, we're celebrating. Big fight this weekend, Manny Pacquiao versus Timothy Bradley 3. I was actually at the first one, June 9th, 2012. And if you would have told me back then that there would even be 3 fights of this garbage, I would have been like, no way. And as everyone knows, Manny Pacquiao clearly probably won the first fight. What I do remember about that is heading out onto the casino floor at MGM Grand. And the people that were in the MGM Grand Arena, because it's connected, them having left early because it was so evident that Manny Pacquiao had probably won. And shocking people just walking up to him and telling him that Timothy Bradley had won the decision. Max Kellerman did a great interview after that asking Timothy Bradley if he actually thought he won. So everybody that had watched the fight pretty much knows that Manny Pacquiao won the first fight. In the second fight, Manny Pacquiao wins by unanimous decision and destroys Timothy Bradley. Why we have a third fight of this, I have no idea, besides money. It's safe, I guess, for Manny Pacquiao. Timothy Bradley, I know why he wants this fight. So there's only one thing we can do, and one thing we can do is try to find something that makes this fight entertaining.
I mean, do you think they're going to have any numbers actually watching this? Just because
Bob Arum says 700,000. It will not be 700,000. Take the under on that. And what, Jimmy, are you controlling the light or something?
Oops.
There we go. They're doing it over there. I think maybe, God, I'm so bad at predicting pay-per-view numbers. Let's say 400,000.
All right, I'm going to write that down.
And the reasoning being is that Manny Pacquiao is on the downside of a career. Timothy Bradley didn't ever had the knockout power. The only thing that makes the fight appealing is Teddy Atlas now in Timothy Bradley's corner as he goes against Manny Pacquiao. And Freddie Roach and Teddy Atlas clearly don't like each other. I had some questions for Sugar about that, but we'll have to wait until he gets back in. He's hobnobbing out there.
He's riding on a what are those
hoverboards.
Thank you. I knew it wasn't a Segway.
I don't know.
Hoverboards. And I'm glad you didn't break your neck. I was really concerned about you.
I did.
Yeah, I know you did, but you did it a whole different way.
I'm an athlete.
We were talking a little bit about Manny Pacquiao, Timothy Bradley 3, and why there is this fight even. It's just about money. But you're part of a small fraternity of world-class trainers. Teddy Atlas and Freddie Roach do not like each other, it appears, in interviews and stuff like that. Have you ever had any interaction with either of the two? And, I mean, you know, Teddy Atlas seems like a fiery guy. Freddie Roach has been with Pacquiao now 15 years. And that's the other question I want to ask you.
Let me cut you off. Since you asked one question and you want to ask me,
I
want to
ask 20 right now, dude.
So it's like a compound question. And
from
my experience working in the courts, you only ask one question, and I'm only going to answer one. So to answer the question, which I choose to answer since you asked so many, I haven't had any run-in with any of those guys, anything bad. You know, I'm too smooth for that. I don't get involved in that stuff. I just let the fighters do the talking. It's the best way. I think I get that from Emmanuel. Emmanuel was the same way. He didn't have any harsh words towards other trainers or anything like that. It's for me, it's not personal. Even with the different fighters, it's not personal. It's just business. And you know, but I think, you know, speaking about the fight, the Timothy Bradley and Pacquiao fight, possibly something very exciting if the two trainers would fight. I think that would probably be a pay-per-view fight. if Teddy probably Atlas get bigger and, numbers. Freddie Roach were to fight. Yeah, I think that would, and let the fighters train. You know, the coaches, and see what happens.
But this is the first time Manny Pacquiao has seen Timothy Bradley. I mean, how much of a difference in the short amount of time of a year or year and a half that Teddy Atlas has been with Timothy Bradley? You think a tremendous difference can be made?
I do think so. I think Timothy Bradley right now is very comfortable and very confident in Teddy Atlas as being his trainer. Something Hill McKenty said earlier. Teddy possibly is the one who can motivate Timothy Bradley, and this makes it a different fight. You know, something it makes it something to be excited about. You have a different trainer, you may see a different outcome. Timothy Bradley and Teddy Atlas had a good fight, you know, the previous fight. So this is something that they can just use, you know, to continue to grow and to be better together. You know, the first one was good, so the second one should be even better. As for Manny Pacquiao and Freddie Roach, you would have to say those guys have been together for 15 years, so maybe the chemistry is not there anymore for either one of them. So it kind of makes it a little bit exciting, and I guess I'm just looking at it in a way to, you know, make some kind of excitement, because I think it will be exciting now that I just made it up and thought about all that stuff, that, you know, the chemistry with Teddy Atlas and Timothy Bradley may be some kind of a big factor in this fight, I think.
Yeah, I mean, this is a tough
Teddy's
one
a motivator. You see him on ESP, he gets so emotional. And a lot of times, really, you do need somebody emotional in that corner. You have to know your fighter. You have to know what makes him laugh, what makes him cry. You know, they can't hide their sads, their smiles and frowns. I got that from training day. You have to be able to know your fighter. And Teddy Atlas is one of those persons who really gets in there and knows the fighter and gets emotional and can rile that fighter up to be, you know, to come from behind or to finish the job.
I guess the question I would have to you then before we move subjects is Manny Pacquiao is probably pound for pound one of the top 10 of all time. Timothy Bradley, when he retires, will not be considered one of maybe the top 50 of all time. I mean, can we expect Pacquiao to go out on a winning note? I mean, how much of the skill is probably there, you think, still?
So let's just be funny. If he doesn't have any injuries, you know, he can go out on a winning note. But you never know what to expect with Pacquiao. So it still brings some kind of excitement to the table for a fight like this. I'm just more excited about now how the fight will be because of the trainers now. They have their personal vendetta, so this would make them train the fighters extra hard. And I know Teddy Atlas would really be, you know, training hard, putting a lot of emphasis on you know, going out there for the kill and looking sensational just so he can have, you know, more of a, you know, bragging rights or ups on Freddie Roach, you know, for beating that his fighter.
Yeah, I was going to see really quickly, I was looking up what the odds were when it opened up at February 9th is when betting opened up. Bradley was a plus 220 underdog. God, man, this is a tough fight to pick. I want to pick Bradley, but something gut tells me. Pacquiao has never looked bad against Timothy Bradley in the two previous fights.
You got Teddy Atlas in there now.
I know, I know. And they say they're pulling from Marquez's films because Marquez has always been a bad fit for Pacquiao as a counterpuncher.
Don't fight like Marquez anyway.
Yeah, so. Exactly.
Bradley has a lot of different styles, actually. You know, so I do like Timothy Bradley as a fighter. He has different styles. He can box. He's not afraid to get in there and bang it out. He's not a big puncher. I'm sad about that.
Right.
Yeah, he was a big puncher. He'd be a bad mother, you know. Mm-hmm. But he's not a big puncher, and that kind of hurts him, you know. As like you said, being one of the pound for pound all time, you know, greatest 10 with Pacquiao, you said. So
yeah. God, and we don't even know if Pacquiao's healthy is the other thing too. I mean, Timothy Bradley's the safe bet, but I'm gonna go Manny Pacquiao for the win.
Well, Timothy Bradley may not be a safe bet as far as being healthy, but he's not going to complain about it after the fight is over.
That's true. Like previous with his shoulder and stuff like that. I'm going to go Manny Pacquiao by decision. Just because as much as Teddy Atlas could maybe fire up Timothy Bradley, I think that the talent still lies probably on Pacquiao's side. So we'll see. I don't know. The boxing world isn't talking about this fight, I can tell you that. They're looking past it, and they're looking at Canelo Khan. So Manny Pacquiao has lost a lot of his luster as a pay-per-view billing champion. So
good.
We'll move on.
It's because he was injured his last fight. That's why.
That's what everybody says.
Nobody wants to hear any excuses after you lose a fight.
That's true.
Just take the loss and keep on moving.
Yeah. What do you think of this Broner stuff with him calling out Floyd Mayweather?
I mean, it's normal. He wants to fight. He wants to fight the top guy. Everybody wants to fight the top guy, Floyd Mayweather. That's where the money is at. You know, and if you got a chance to beat him, you got a chance to beat him. They have some kind of little beef. You know, maybe they should settle it, but I don't think Mayweather's going to draw out for that. You know, he said he's retired, and I don't think a fight like that would draw him out unless it was for super mega money. But, right now it's just all talk. Mayweather, he just laughed. You know, he just laughed and clapped. That's all he could do. There's nothing more to do about it. You know, he's the ticket. He's the draw. You know, Adrian Broner wants to fight him. Floyd Mayweather don't want to fight him like that. It's not so important to him in his life and his career to fight Adrian Broner. And, you know, Adrian said, oh, we can do it in the gym or whatever. But it's nothing that's going to make or break Floyd Mayweather. So yeah, it's business sense. No, I don't think it'll happen.
All right. We're going to go to our next guest, try calling her up here. It's Alicia Zapatella. We're going to try calling her really quick. She's going through the Olympic trials as a wrestler. Let's see if we're pronouncing the name right. She'll correct me right off the bat. It would only be fitting on an anniversary show to get some names.
Well, she ain't here to correct you, because she would correct you probably in a different way if she was here.
Sounds like it's going to voicemail anyways.
Voicemail.
Hello?
Hello, Alicia. You're live on the air with the Undercard. How are you today?
Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good. We are joined by, and if I pronounce your name wrong, I apologize, but Alicia Zapatella. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Holy cow. Look at him. Wow, that's like a communication job over there.
It took 3 years, and he finally got a name right.
All
right.
This might be a perfect show then. I've not butchered a name yet. You're going through the Olympic trials in women's wrestling. Tell us a little bit about that for people that don't know the stages of qualifying for an Olympics.
Well, there are a lot of high-level tournaments that you have to play top two, top whatever, like national tournaments, just against all the best women in the country in order to even qualify to wrestle to try to get into the Olympics. And last weekend, I haven't wrestled in 2 years. And my mixed martial arts coach, James Gray, told me that why not try? And so I went to the last chance qualifier, and I ended up pinning everybody. I went out, and I was a better wrestler than I've ever been, and ended up placing first, and now I guess I'm qualified.
SFS does that to people. You guys just come out of those camps winners, man, and everything like that. You know, James Gray's got the magic touch. You obviously got some talent. Tell us a little bit about the next step, then. You're wrestling again this weekend, correct?
Yes. Well, first things first, I have to make weight. I'm wrestling at 48 kilograms, which is 105.8 pounds. And I've been working out all week, just doing mixed martial arts. That's my actual favorite way to train rather than just training wrestling. But once I get there, I'm not sure who I'm wrestling yet, but I will be placed in a bracket, and if I win all of those matches against people including, like, the past Olympian, the national winners for women's wrestling and everything, and once I win that, I would go on to represent the United States in the Olympics.
That's huge. So how many people are left in the brackets currently? Who's in there this week, and how many people?
I'm actually not very sure because I don't really like to look at the names. I like to go out and wrestle whoever they put on the mat in front of me.
Okay, and then how many people get to make an Olympic team?
There is only one person at each weight.
Is there reserves in case that person gets injured, too? Is there, like, you know, if you finish second, you could be called upon?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, if someone is injured, then they will get to fill in.
Well, this is very exciting, and when I saw James Gray posting about this, I definitely wanted to talk to you because we're in the middle of Olympic qualifying. Tell us a little bit some of the differences in Olympic qualifying compared to MMA.
Well, mixed martial arts, it is a lot different. You are preparing for one fight against. You know who you're going to be facing. You know what you're going to be up against. So you really strategize what you train. And with wrestling, it's completely different. You don't know who you're going to face. You just basically have to focus on making yourself the best that you can be and be prepared for literally everything.
Now, let me ask you this, Alicia. You said that you hadn't wrestled in 2 years. We know that you were training in MMA with SFS, but give us your background. How did you – I assume you were a wrestler first and then got into MMA. Mm-hmm. How did all that come about?
Well, it's a long story. My older brother wrestled, and I had been at his practices since I was born. And I always thought it would be so much fun to go out, be like my brother, run with the boys, you know. And then eventually they would just get me on the mat, wrestle around with me. And by the time I was 5, I was competing in wrestling tournaments, and it was just fun. I loved the sport. And when I was in probably about 6th grade, the past Olympic coach, Tom Tomio, had approached me about the possibilities with wrestling that I could possibly have and opened my eyes to this. And he approached me again in high school. And I did wrestle in Ohio. I went, it was 146 and I'll say like 36, something around there.
Okay.
In high school against boys.
Okay.
And I won a couple national tournaments. I ended up getting a good scholarship to the best wrestling college in the country, but it wasn't for me.
Okay.
I ended up coming back. I came to Michigan originally to pursue my wrestling dreams, and I found mixed martial arts, and I just fell in love.
Okay. And then how many MMA bouts have you had, and what's your record in MMA?
I've had 5.
Okay.
I'm 3-2. Currently, the only people that I've lost to, I was fighting too high in weight. I've recently dropped down to atom weight, and that's where I'm going to stay.
Okay.
I was just looking at some of the pictures of women's wrestling, and I'll be honest, I don't know a lot about it, so you're actually educating the crew here. But you guys don't wear the ear headgear.
It is our choice if we wear it or not. I actually do.
Okay. I was going to say, the pictures I see, you're not wearing the ear gear in most of the Olympic pictures I see. I thought that was a requirement, but I guess that's just preference if you want cauliflower ear or not.
Mm-hmm.
Well, very cool.
So matter if she's like, yeah.
She's like, I don't want cauliflower ear.
I don't want cauliflower ear. I will give it. That's not a problem.
I'm going to be an earring model down the road.
Yeah, I actually almost never wear headgear in anything other than a match. I mean, even in MMA, I still haven't gotten cauliflower ears, so I guess I'm just blessed with good ears.
Or you've never been put in a situation where they're getting pinched and stuff. This is a hypothetical maybe question or just out of curiosity, but is there any like mental preparation, like you won't sleep on your back or at night because it's subconsciously thinking you're going to get pinned? Is it always on the side? You're always keeping both shoulders up? Or is there anything mentally that you're preparing for?
Actually, I did not sleep on my back until I started doing jiu-jitsu. I wouldn't do it because I was a wrestler and I couldn't be on my back.
That's right. You can't let both shoulder blades hit.
Right.
So now that you're in the wrestling qualifying, are you back to not sleeping on your back?
No, actually, I'm not. I sleep on my back now. I've pulled me in.
Would you ever before, like, would you ever just like wake up like almost on your back and just freak out and like jump up and like, no, I'm good, I'm up.
Actually, no, I don't actually really ever recall waking up and being on my back. Yeah. I don't know, it might be something subconscious because I actually almost never got pinned.
So
there was a time when I didn't get pinned for almost 6 years.
So, wow. Not even sleep and blankets.
Took her down.
So if you get selected, or I should say when you get selected to go to the Olympics, what is the process of that? How long are you going to be training here? How long will you be training somewhere else? Are there any plans for that?
I'm actually not very sure.
Okay.
I know about as much as you do.
Okay.
That's okay, because there will be like three weeks of prep shows with Bob Costas before the Olympics. You'll know where you're going, and he'll just ramble on.
Brought to you by Visine.
Exactly, for his Sochi eye. Where are the Olympics if you qualify? Because the wrestling's a summer Olympic sport. Where is the next summer Olympics at?
They are in
Rio.
Brazil.
Whoa.
In Rio.
They're in Rio, yeah.
I did not know that.
Really?
I did not know that. Is Brazil ready for the Olympics?
Yeah, they're using the World Cup stadium, I think. Because they had the World Cup there last year.
Yeah.
James Gray is pretty familiar with Brazil.
Yeah, he's fought a lot there. But I'm just saying the Olympics draw a lot of people. Is Brazil ready for the Olympics?
Yeah, Rio August 5th through the 21st.
I think they'll pull it off. I mean, Sochi pulled it off. I mean,
no, they didn't.
Well, they put on a good facade anyway. I mean, it happened.
No, they
didn't. I mean, sure,
now,
that did.
All the stories that were coming out of Sochi
but when you watched it on TV, didn't it look fine? Thank you.
Now I got to ask you. I've never wore a singlet before, like a wrestler and stuff. Once you put that on, are you bathroom locked in for a while? Or are those easy to get out?
They're easy. I think they're really comfortable, actually. It's kind of weird. When I put on a singlet, I have a completely different demeanor about myself. I carry myself completely differently. It's a game changer for me.
It doesn't do a lot for hiding, like, blemishes, though. So me and Marv would really sweat in those.
Oh, God. It would be terrible.
It would be bad. First off, I don't think they have singlets in our size.
Are they,
Marv, I look at Marv, I think singlet, all I can think of is King Kong Bundy.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, you'll never catch me in one of those. No matter what singlet I put on, it looks like the Borat One Piece.
Get
that image out of your head in a couple of days, Jimmy.
It was an honest question because you to go to the bathroom in a singlet, you got to take it all off, right?
Yeah. You had to pull it all down.
Yeah.
It's really a hassle.
Yeah,
exactly.
Wow.
Well, we want to wish you the best of luck. We want you to say hi to everybody at SFS. They've always been our friends over these 3 years we've been on the radio. And we want to have you back before Bob Costas has you on for the Olympics, Alicia.
Yeah, all right.
All right. So best of luck.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you very much. That was Alicia Zapatella. She is training currently this week. Cutting weight, getting ready.
To be an Olympian.
To be an Olympian.
I know. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
I mean, that means you are the best of the best of your country, and you're going to represent your country to the entire world.
Or you play professional basketball.
It's not surprising that that's the gym that she would come out of to do it.
Yeah, exactly.
No. What's that?
And it's not surprising. Go ahead.
That's the gym that she would come out of as SFS.
Yeah. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And you know what's cool about the Olympics is that I won't watch curling the rest of the years, but when curling comes on in the Winter Olympics, I'm
hooked. Love it.
Women's figure skating.
Love it.
I don't catch a lot of it, but come the Olympics, because it's so competitive, I watch it.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like bobsledding in the Winter Olympics, but like you don't see. There's no like bobsledding season. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like,
right.
Even like the World Cup kicks soccer up for a while.
Right.
It'll be up after the Olympics again. Like,
so she would be a household name because people get hooked on those Olympics for 16 or 18 days, and they watch everything. So 16. she would be a highlight and stuff like that. So we wish her the best.
She'd
of luck.
Be on a box of Wheaties or something.
She could if she goes all the way. She could be America's sweet. She could be America's next Mary Lou Retton.
That's
true.
Right.
You think about when the Olympics come on. You're like, I'm interested in these sports that I will never see again for another 4 years.
Yep. Right, yeah. Exactly.
Exactly.
And sit and just devote your time to it.
You don't sit and watch pole vaulting and shot putting.
Yeah.
Right. What you do for the Olympics.
Well, another thing I like is it's a winter sport is the decathlon.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't ever get to see that like the rest of the time, but to me, that's fascinating.
Is a triathlon in the summer? Is that the swimming, running?
Yeah, I believe so.
Why was that funny?
I don't know what we're laughing at now.
I'm just laughing at when I watch bobsled and, you know, they wreck and they still have to slide down wrecking the whole
way. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Every time I watch bobsled, though, I always think of Cool Runnings.
Of course.
I just can't not. Every time they're doing the 1, 2, 3, I'm like, feel the rhythm. Feel the life. Get on up. It's bobsled time.
I want to know, like, the luge. Like, whoever thought that was a great idea?
Demented German gynecologist.
It has to be.
Whoever thought two-man luge was a good idea.
Like, one man was bad enough, right? Like, okay, strap yourself to this board, fly down this ice tunnel, and then how could we make this better? I know. Lay a dude on top of me.
Robin Williams had a great little bit on that. He said, what? Demented German gynecologist came up with the luge. I know. I shall strap an ice skate to my ass, dress up like a sperm, and go balls foot down an ice chute. Yeah, that will be fun. And don't let me start in the two-man luge. Whoa, boys, get a room.
Yeah, there it is.
Yeah, exactly. You got to get close, buddy.
Yeah, you are.
You know, in the military, they have a saying. It's called nut to butt. That is nut to butt.
That's nut in butt. All right. There are only so many places for things to go.
Nut and butter.
Right. That is nut and butter right there. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
And I assume the person that's on top is always on top. It's something that you race.
You define who's the power top and who's the power bottom.
In certain countries, you are legally married after doing the two-man luge, actually.
I'm pretty sure you're right.
Fun
time. I'm almost positive.
They have three-man and four-man, too?
Yeah, they do.
Bobsled.
Hey,
bobsled.
Yeah, that's but they're not laying on each other.
Right. And that's
bobsled, they're just
kind of
riding in a thing.
Right. You're riding a giant.
That would be something. That would be something interesting. I wonder if there's like a world record for number of stacks of people going down the luge.
Oh, I don't know. That would be interesting.
How high could we get before you'd have to start strapping with like a ratchet strap?
Yeah, luge seems like in a sport you would have to have money to get involved in, too, because you need a track like that. Bobsledding is another one you probably need a lot of money to get involved in.
Yeah, I don't know. You can't just, like fly down a hill, I don't think, right?
People are like, oh, I can't get my son into hockey because they grow up and you're buying equipment constantly. It's an expensive sport. No, bobsledding seems like an expensive sport.
There's no ice arenas around here, so there's no luge lunges?
No.
Yeah, no.
No, exactly. No.
Thanks,
Ray. You know?
That's why the poor people run.
But what I was referring to is
just go barefoot.
Right? Yeah. Right. If you ever see a bobsled tip, they will continue down as they tip the whole way. I'm just wondering. First off, you care about their safety.
Right.
But after that, I'm wondering if like they're blaming somebody in the whole way down. Like, oh, God. It's just
right.
Sliding
exactly.
down. You know?
Yeah, I think they're probably – on the way down, it's probably just how do I avoid my leg falling
dying.
Off and dying.
Right.
But once they get to the bottom, they're absolutely like, God damn it, Jimmy.
Exactly.
Like, right. Well, you keep your head straight. You
right.
know this. Why'd you have to look
well,
at
that's
the chick?
What, right. Well, and that's the thing, too, is, I mean, and you saw in the movie that when they hit those turns, they have to know every single turn on the track so that they can all move in conjunction. Because if one person throws it off, that's what happens.
Topple, topple, topple.
Winter Olympics are better. Personally, from a watching experience, maybe because of hockey.
It's more slippery. Everything is just slippery, so there's more... There's more chance of injury and dying.
Well, you just want to see the agony of defeat.
Yeah.
Yes.
You just want to see that old CBS commercial. The agony of defeat. Dun,
dun, dun, dun. Yep.
Now, see, for me, summer a little bit because I was a swimmer in junior high and high school, so I like watching like the swimming trials and the swimming events. But otherwise than that, yeah.
But see, swimming's simple because the technology's there that the first hand touches, it's fine. But
right.
I love it. Like figure skating, they'll be like – 9.4, 9.7, 9.3, right.
And then
everybody
Russians,
becomes a figure 6. Skating 0. Expert.
Always
they know what was into it.
Yeah.
9.3, what?
Right, like, exactly.
Yeah. You watch it for 4 years.
Score, the Russian score. You always throw out the Russian score.
The Russian score, 6.0.
Yeah,
exactly.
Well, don't they Russians do. They throw out the top and the bottom score, right?
Yes.
Speaking of Russians, I thought Alexei was supposed to be on today.
No, Alexis. Oh. No, Alexi was on 2 weeks
right,
ago.
Right, but I thought it was in the text. It was Alexi. And
it's
I was
Alexis.
Like,
yeah. Thanks for bringing that.
You just saw the A-L-E.
Yeah.
I saw Alex.
Maybe. I don't know.
Maybe.
But you're like three amazing guests, and I'm like, Alexi, cool.
Yeah, let's do Kevin Bacon about the 80s here really quick. This is pretty funny.
We have as everybody knows, we're celebrating everything about the 80s. We all were born and grew up in the 80s.
Except Liz over there.
Except Liz.
Born in the 70s.
Watch, listen to this.
Well, I mean, we were born in the 70s, but we all grew up in the 80s. But Kevin Bacon, who honestly is probably an icon and probably a good representative of 80s culture, had a few words to say about the millennials. And Liz, this one's for you.
Cocaine Cowboys.
I don't know what just happened over there.
Oh, hi. I'm 2-time Saturn Award nominee Kevin Bacon.
Saturn Award.
And I would like to talk to you about 80s awareness. Awareness of 80s culture and technology has been in a significant decline, especially amongst a certain demographic. I'm talking to you, millennials. All you guys born after 1985 have no idea how hard life was. If I was too shy to ask a girl out, there was no OK Twinder. I went to the White Pages, Google it, and called her house. Then you had to make small talk with her mom for like 20 minutes before Alicia even came to the phone. And let me tell you, when she turns down your invitation to Sparrows, you can't just swipe away the hurt.
Sparrows?
You want to know my favorite app? Rubik's Cube. I saw you tweet an article about Russia. You think Russia's a threat now? Let me tell you about a little thing called the Cold War. They had nukes pointed at us for 20 years. You couldn't even skateboard to a Blockbuster without getting nuked. My friend Tommy went out to rent a copy of Gremlins and never came back. You know why? Nuked. At least that's what my parents told me. Hey, I'm trying to make a point here. What, you guys can't pay attention for more than 2 minutes? I don't get it, I've had it. Somebody take this mic, please.
She's over here like, what?
You people will never know the comfort of parachute pants.
They're coming back.
That's Kevin Bacon giving 80s. I remember the late 80s.
Could we always use that music?
My right. My uncle was single at the time. My mom's brother in Party Lines had just come out. You remember Party Lines?
Oh, God, yeah.
And I remember, like, he spent
four hard.
Yeah, Party Line. Yeah,
Party Line. Do you remember, Sugar?
He's like, oh.
He's like, yeah, dude.
Like, oh, I'm on a Party Line. Ooh, ooh, like,
remember
ooh.
The ads at night when you were a kid? Oh. You knew you were up late if a Party Line ad came up. Yeah, a bunch of girls in a jacuzzi going, call us, 1-900, Party Line.
That's when it was, like, It TV and On.
Yeah.
That was It.
Yeah.
That was, like, It and On.
That's anyone ever call Party Line?
No.
No, but we used to call Hooked on Phonics from the payphones at swim team practice. Back then, we'd call 1-800-ABCDEFG.
Oh my God.
Or 1-800-CALL-SAM.
We used to do three ways. Yeah. Like a three.
Yeah.
I had a three way, then I'd call you with a three way, then you call some more people with three way, and we'd all be on the phone, like, right.
A three-way.
Like, we got a nine way.
Exactly.
Yep. I remember
Liz is over there going, well, you said payphone. What's a payphone?
I have a payphone.
Wait, do you ever know what a payphone is?
Have you ever used one?
Yes, I have.
When?
Where?
They had one when I was in middle school, still at the store.
She's like, we were at a museum
in Kentucky.
Henry Ford.
Yeah.
No, but whoever called grandma?
Well, I call grandma all the time.
What for?
To normally ask for something, Nana, I call her, but what do you mean?
No,
you grandma.
You literally dialed grandma.
Oh, no.
On the radio.
No, on the phone.
On the phone.
Yeah.
What did I say?
You said the radio.
Oh.
And what happened then?
I remember that was a thing, but I don't ever remember doing it.
It was you'd call to get the correct time.
The time.
Yes.
I remember
Yeah.
You literally dialed grandma.
That's right. So at the tone, the time is 11.
Here's an 80s.
Exactly.
So if I want to get into the building because it's cold outside, you know, because I'm arriving late, I don't know. We used to use pagers.
Yeah.
And then you would just turn them upside down.
911.
Yeah. You turn upside down and say hello. Yeah.
07734.
Yep.
And you turn upside down and be like, hello. I'd be like, oh. She just text me hello.
Yeah.
But then she'd be like, go to hell.
Well, I remember 1992 when I started dating. You wouldn't leave your house because you could miss that phone call from
that
girl.
Miss that call.
And then we got a caller ID box, and I thought it was the greatest thing ever because I could go out of the house for a little bit and scroll to see.
You see that she never called you,
right? But when you were waiting for a call, Liz, you couldn't leave your house because if you missed that call, you would never know.
Nope. Or if you did, you had to like call and be like, "Hey, I just was
did
calling.
Somebody just
maybe
call
you
me?
Called,
yeah. right?"
And when Solid Gold was on,
she's like,
"No,
I didn't call
there
you."
Right, exactly.
At 8 o'clock to watch the Solid Gold dancers because you couldn't leave.
Yeah,
no, record.
Yeah, you
could
not. You did.
There were no VCRs. There were no Betamaxes. Well, there was.
There, well, everybody's there were, jumping on you, huh?
There were VCRs, but
poor Liz.
You still,
like,
still did not call my house between the hours of 9 and 10 on Friday or Sunday later because X-Files is on and I would kill you.
I'd kill you.
Yeah, the craziest thing I did as a kid, though, was we were at a Holodome once, and me and my brother, we went.
That was always supposed to be the coolest place to go.
Yeah, Holodome was like the greatest thing ever.
It's like they got a slide inside. It was like a roller coaster or something.
It was the Holiday Inn indoor hotel, which had a pool indoor. So, like, in the wintertime, you could enjoy a pool indoor, the Holodomes.
What?
But we would go around and knock and then go around the corner and see people come out of their hotel rooms, look around, and that was funny to us. But when technology caught up in security cameras, you know.
Yeah.
There was no security cameras anywhere. You could do anything.
Yeah.
I remember, you know, a little bit mischievous, but we found out a way to get quarters out of the arcade machine.
Oh, yeah.
Right. You know what I'm talking about. Nowadays, you can't do that.
Arcade machine.
Yeah.
You could
tie a string on.
I could still do it if it's out for cameras.
Drop the quarter down and put it down, or make a slug from a penny or a nickel.
Yeah. Why aren't we going to Chuck E. Cheese like right now?
Because there's cameras now.
Bullshit.
And they're smarter now. That it doesn't work. Like before, it had to be the right size and weight, and like that was it.
There's cameras everywhere. It's horrible.
Dang it.
All right, we're gonna wrap up episode 184. Thank you for 3 years of fun. Congratulations, Liz, on your title, Miss Undercard.
Yes.
That's a huge, huge thing in our eyes. We want to thank all our guests. Let's start with Master Ken for bringing
Master Ken.
Much respect, Master Ken. We got to get that off the thing, too. That's got to be a drop here.
the undercard is bullshit.
We want to thank Hilmer Kinty for joining us. And also we want to thank Alicia Zapatella. Good luck on your Olympic run here. Hopefully you can make the Olympics. We'll see everybody next week. Joseph Donofrio has an event, the Brawl in the Fight Night at the Joe.
Yes.
It's happening Saturday. We're going to give away tickets on Facebook tonight. All you got to do is remember what would be funny. What would be a good trivia question if someone listened tonight?
What weapon did Master Ken recommend I use in my buffet battle?
Yes.
Okay, that's a perfect question. Right. If you know that, you get four tickets. Message us, and we'll make sure four tickets are waiting for you at Joe Louis Arena box office.
Thermostat.
No, that was
Rongo.
See, if you were here and you early, you would have a chance.
If you were here
tickets.
On time.
And we'll see everybody next week. Take care.
This is a previously recorded episode of The Undercard, Hand Combat Radio.